A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
Reporting in progress.
If that doesn't make it on the show, I'm going to be upset.
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
All right, welcome to the World Series Dreaming Chicago Cubs Dreamcast, now hanging out with Obstructed View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs, but we're just a fan of, well, we're a bunch of fans of the Local 9. I guess I'm the only one who's local now. And we really love the Chicago Cubs and baseball. So, yeah, the Cubs are not playing in the postseason right now, but we are currently watching, or at least following, Game 6 of the National League Championship Series. The Dodgers at this time are leading, and both sides have turned it into a bullpen game, which I guess is the norm these days because everybody's breaking. So how's everybody doing?
Doing better than the Mets.
Yeah. Better than the average bullpen arm.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm still unemployed, like getting interviews. So that's a good start. Got unemployment benefits going. So, yay. But, yeah, at some point I'm going to need one of them gerbs. But, yeah, some of these guys are still working. And we'll see if a game 7, unlikely as it might be, will result as we record this. But I figure we just talk about the playoffs as they have happened and react to it, and then maybe set up a fun game, because at some point we want the Cubs to also come back to October baseball, very meaningful October baseball. And I thought we just use the rest of the time to play this silly little hypothetical game that I set up. So how's that for a plan, fellas?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
Sounds good.
Keep on rocking in the free world.
As the spring gave way to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrows.
The Yankees, they seem to have a lot of trouble with the Cleveland Guardians, but they ultimately prevailed in 5 games. The game that prevented the sweep was very unexpected. Otherwise, I guess it would have been a sweep. But there were just so many weird things that could have made this series go either way. Like, I feel like the first game, the Guardians were basically 3 wild pitches away from getting it into extras, right? And then the third game, which was the basically the big Christmas home run from Jokenzie Noel. And then David Fry walked it off in the bottom of the, was it the bottom of the ninth? Did that go to the extras? I can't even remember anymore. It's all blurring.
I think
together.
That was bottom of the 10th.
All right. Yeah, but it's been a much more exciting series than the NLCS. So I thought we'd start with the AL Championship Series and get your thoughts, guys.
I think it's hilarious that last year it was like, oh, these up and coming small market teams, it doesn't matter who you have on your roster, someone's going to rise from, you know, the shadows and take over a series and catapult your team to, you know, the end of October. And then this year, it's like, if you don't have a massive stud driving your team's offense, there is no way that you can win, you know, win your way to the World Series. Because that just seems like the narrative just got flipped back into the traditional sense. Because holy crap, do the Yankees have star power. And they really delivered when it mattered.
Yeah, they really showed up this time around.
I think it was kind of up in the air who was going to get the ALCS MVP. I kind of thought it would always be Stanton, because all of his hits when he does get hits have been home runs. and they've been big time home runs, which, I guess factors into the mind of the voters, whoever votes for this these awards. But Juan Soto basically guaranteed himself $1 billion this winter, right?
Yeah, that he can finally start to afford stuff next year. Yeah, I think the thing about the Stanton is it really feeds the classic narrative that your star is only as successful as the guy you have backing him up in the order. That if you don't have someone strong behind your big stud in the lineup, they're just going to pitch around him. And yeah, with Stanton playing the anchor for that middle of the lineup, yeah, if you did pitch around Soto and Judge, you were gonna be met with Stanton, and he did. I mean, obviously he let quite a few opportunities go by, but when he didn't, he crushed it. And there's something about, like, obviously I'm no Yankee fan here, but there is something about seeing just the gargantuan behemoths do their thing. Judge and Stanton they're just human spectacles. So it was pretty fun to watch that happen. And obviously, Juan Soto is a freak of nature. So that was pretty cool. And but I think he kind of warranted the MVP praise just because it was so consistent throughout that series. Just really driving a stake through the heart of the Guardians.
I was kind of thinking in terms of Stanton never using his legs because the dude can't run anymore. Like I think everything below the waist is broken, and even when he swings, it's all upper body. Like he doesn't use his legs. He just kind of swivels and it goes like 10,000 miles the other way, right? So I guess in that sense, like you're just looking at a guy who is permanently the DH who can definitely hit. Like he's the designated hitter, but the DH means he can definitely hit it a mile if it
Yeah.
connects. So there's some value to that, especially since they're paying him all that money that the Marlins signed him to and then decided someone else can pay all of this.
Yeah, I feel bad for the Guardians fans. I mean, obviously, I'm rooting for the Cubs over them when the Cubs played them in 2016, but they've been a bit long-suffered themselves, and they just did not have a good series. Jose Ramirez, in particular, had kind of a lousy series.
I guess you could
Yeah.
argue that they shouldn't have even been here because they were kind of the team that did the least in the AL Central, and yet because of how they built up and because of the foundation that they had, they were able to win the division. It was kind of strange how it worked out for them.
Well, their big problem was their bullpen ran out of gas. It felt very similar to what happened to the Cubs, whole lineup at the end of last year, when it just didn't seem like they had it anymore. And no matter how close to a win it looked like they were going to get, there was going to be a way that it would fall through their fingers. And to see them, especially their closer, the Class A or Clase?
It's
Class
Class
A.
A, yeah.
I can never remember if the inside of my head is hearing it wrong. I don't talk out loud outside of these meetings. So
Not
yeah,
even to
see,
your kids.
see, see just not about baseball, I guess. But to see him just start to give up the long balls, first in the series against Detroit, and then, for that to continue on against the Yankees, it did seem reminiscent of when Aroldis Chapman got used to the full limits in the 2016 playoffs and ultimately pretty much ran out of gas by the time Game 7 rolled around. So Yeah, definitely went out for them because when the back end of your bullpen goes out, it really is the most helpless feeling in the world for a fan who is hoping for that, next level achievement. You can't win if your bullpen can't shut it down, and they just couldn't shut it down.
And I
Sorry,
think
that was my dog agreeing with your point.
hi. Hi, puppy. I was just thinking in terms of every team at one point or another this postseason has had to employ a bullpen game. I don't know if it's just by design or if they simply like for example, the Dodgers, they lost Glasnow, they lost Dustin May, they probably lost a bunch of other guys that I completely forgot. So today, a clinching game, a potential clincher, is a bullpen game, and I feel like they got super lucky because they, as I speak, they had just loaded the bases with two outs, and Jesse Winker flew out, right? So that could have been disastrous. And trying to string together not just like the final 9 outs, but 18 to 25 outs with the bullpen is crazy, right? And that's going to run you down even with the built-in off day. So it's like I don't know how you contend with something like that. Like in the ALCS, for example, the Yankees lost a reliever and they brought back Mark Leiter Jr. And there were various points where I thought, man, he's going to give up something crazy. And in a way, he did because there was that really terrible play that he almost made a spectacular play, and then he just bowled it through Rizzo's legs at first base, so allowed the Guardians to tie the game, right? But at the same time, he made enough pitches to secure just a tie until the Yankees could score again. So I don't know how relievers should be thought about in the postseason because at any given time, like with Class A or Devin Williams or any number of guys like Clay Holmes and Luke Weaver, they're going to give up homers because at some point you're going to get tired and your pitch is going to go to the wrong part of the zone and someone's going to run into it, right? But you pretty much want those guys more often than not. Like the alternative is scarier. So I guess you just do the best you can and run with it and hope that it the balls bounce your way.
The bullpen game prevalence is just so interesting. It kind of makes you kick yourself as a Cubs fan because the starting rotation was where the Cubs had depth for days. It just seemed like no matter who got hurt, there was a serviceable starter waiting in the wings. And to see all of these high profile, great teams who are making it to the final rounds of the playoffs just be like, yeah, we don't really have a starter today. Let's just, shove something together. That has been pretty jarring and disconcerting. For as much as we talk about the loss of the dominant starter through the regular season, that nobody's, going deep into games, to see it play out to this level is nuts. I mean, it's one thing if you're still reeling from, doubleheader at the end of the season in the wild card round. Like, sure, you don't have time to space out the games as much in those first few games. So if it just so happens that you can't fit that extra starter on your roster or whatever, guys are hurt, but it's everybody is putting together these bullpen games and starters going two innings. It's just like it's no big deal. And that seems like one area where the Cubs could have had a decent advantage in the postseason is having ample reliable starters to choose from, who could go up against some pretty good offenses and you could trust them to keep the game close.
Yeah, it's been weird. I mean, certainly Detroit's the team that was most bullpen game heavy even during the regular season. Like I kind of get that it's something you really only want to do in the playoffs or when you're desperate. because you're going to burn your guys out. But, when it's game seven, then yeah, it's all hands on deck. But I don't necessarily think it's been working as well. I think some teams, certainly, like I could complain about the Mets today, pulling Manaea after only two innings, and then the bullpen, I mean, they gave up some more runs. I mean, process and result are different things, but I think they probably could have left Manaea a little longer.
Yeah, I was surprised by the quick hook, too. I was not surprised to see them leave the bases loaded in the top of the sixth, but. All right, I'm following along. Poor Mets. They had a shot.
Yeah. And two innings of Edwin Diaz, too. So he's done for the game. Like, who's going to close if they even come back? They have nine outs remaining to come back as of this sentence. So it's like, yeah, you've just burned some of your best relievers. Ryan Stanek is currently pitching. If he's done, who's left? It's going to be a little dicey for them the rest of the way, and in game seven, especially since it's like tomorrow, they have barely any recovery time. So yeah, this is going to be rough. But yeah, we can definitely switch over to the NLCS, where it seems like over the first five games they've been trading beatdowns every game. The Mets were shut out a couple of times, and the Dodgers suffered their two beatdowns, and currently this is a much more reasonable game. It's not a runaway beatdown, but it is like a pretty comfortable lead for the Dodgers at the moment.
Yeah, it's been a weird series. It's hard to explain. When the Dodgers have won, they've looked absolutely unbeatable. When the Mets have won, they've looked like they were giant killers. So It's good, I guess, to see this game play out, hopefully a little closer. I don't know if I can keep up with the frenetic back and forth, like crazy, oh my God, jaw dropping, Twitter breaking, home run comebacks back and forth in every game, but it would be nice to see a little bit more than what they've experienced thus far in that series. So I don't know, maybe there's one more miracle left in the Mets.
Yeah, it does seem like the ALCS that we just talked about was much more dramatic from the standpoint of, if you look at the win probability curves, it's all over the place. It is a literal roller coaster. And then you look at the Mets and Dodgers, and it's a plateau. There was like no late comeback in many of those games. So it's kind of weird to see the contrast in just a single postseason, but there it is. I was actually thinking in terms of ratings, because we had seen that the LCS, possibly because of the star power, has gotten some of the best ratings they've had in a while. And now you have a situation where a random small-ish market in Cleveland is out. So yeah, definitely New York and possibly Los Angeles if they make the stand up. So those are the two best media markets in the United States, and they happen to have some like world-class stars. So you're going to get a lot of international attention, particularly in LA, where of course you have Shohei Ohtani and Yamamoto.
Yeah, it really is a storybook set up for MLB as far as the marketing aspect. Having New York fans able to watch the beginning of games and LA fans able to watch the end, it should work out pretty well. yeah, just the absolute stud lineups. It's all there. It'd be a little nicer if Freddie Freeman were healthy, and hopefully he, should they advance, you hope to see him in a little bit better shape when the World Series rolls around. And obviously great to see Rizzo back on the biggest stage. That should be fun. But yeah, should it be Dodgers Yankees? That's just one hell of a matchup. I mean, it's all the big names. Yeah, you've got the international flair. You've got New York. You know, they've been waiting for it for a long time. And as far as who the big studs are on New York, Aaron Judge is a really likable guy. So I don't hate seeing him get that spot in the biggest limelight of them all.
The same goes for Juan Soto too.
Yeah.
So, do you think the Mets and/or the Yankees are going to give Juan Soto the $1 billion?
Yes. Well, maybe not a billion, but they'll certainly be something approaching Ohtani money. Maybe without the weird deferrals.
With the deferrals, they might use like $1 billion of concrete money, but in real value money, it'll probably be more like 600 million or something silly like that. Because
I don't even know how you wrap your mind around the amount of money you have to pay Soto, because he is, what is he like? I feel like he keeps getting younger. Is he is he 25, 26, 27?
I'm pretty sure he's 25. Like, we can look it up on ye old internet if you want, but
It's just insane.
25 sounds about right. Yes, he is age 25. He does not actually turn 26 until this coming week.
Okay.
So he will enter free agency at age 26 and play his first free season of free agency at age 26.
Man, he'll be
Yeah.
almost as young as Hayward. Hopefully, it goes better for him.
He's gonna make a heck of a lot more money, even in like Hayward's era value. So, yeah.
Yeah, and depending on when he peaks, you know, looking back on his career once it's done, you know, hopefully he doesn't head downhill in his 20s, but you got to imagine you're getting a lot of really potential peak Soto years in there, whoever should get him. I don't even know if, you know, the Cubs are pretty much all talk when it comes to pursuing that level of free agent anyway, but I don't even know if they will allow people to discuss them getting Soto. Like, I think Jed's just gonna shut it down on Twitter, like conspire with Elon to mute those conversations if Cubs and Soto show up in the same tweet. Like, it'll be that level of suppression. Like, no, guys, it's just not gonna happen. Like,
Until it
no,
does happen,
we're
because that's kind of
no.
how he signed Shota, right? And then the John Lester thing, kind of what happened out of the blue, those are nowhere near the amount of money they're going to have to shell out for Soto. And that's part of the reason why it's so unlikely. And the other reason is I don't think there's any like incentive for Juan Soto to leave New York because of what a big stage he's on, you know? So it's like two strikes against the Cubs right there is the money and the fact that they're not New York, which
But
kind of
that's
sucks because I think Chicago's better, but I'm biased because I live here.
it could, yeah, it could be the incentive though. You know, like he's it I have to agree with Ron Coomer on this, that like guys want to play in New York. Like, it's kind of a dream to play in Yankee Stadium and to check that off your bucket list. But it could be that after a year doing it, he can check it off his bucket list and just take the money and be wherever he wants. And I have no idea where Soto actually wants to be, but he's been on the East Coast. He's been in San Diego. He's been in New York. Wherever he wants to be, he's going to be.
Right.
And if he envisions a future where a certain team is going to be winning for a long time, and obviously that if you were to go to the Dodgers, it would actually be pretty upsetting, you know, for that to happen.
Right.
I mean, God, like Ohtani's not even pitching yet. So that would just kind of be a joke, but it's his prerogative. But yeah, I don't see the Ricketts doing that, and I think that pretty much ends the dream in my mind. If it, you know, obviously something could change, because I know very, very much not everything, but I don't see it happen. I just don't, I won't even let myself believe it's going to happen. And I let myself believe an awful lot of, outrageous things.
If it does happen, though, we will all be pleasantly surprised, and in the best way.
The beauty and the history in this cathedral, the sky so blue against the grass so green, like time stood still forever.
That's a good place to segue to our little game, because it does have to do with team building, right? Like, in order for the Cubs to get back to the biggest stage, they have to get to a team that wins at least 86 games. More likely, like we had said last time, and like the powers that be stated in their end of year emails and press conferences and whatnot, you want 90 plus. So we're talking about seven extra wins, and that seven extra wins is essentially at least one star player. So we can determine where that is, but in my mind, I was thinking, like, so many people are complaining about the Cubs. Like, they're, for us, I believe we think that there's a solid foundation in place. The club is on an upward trajectory, particularly given how much talent there is oozing out of the minor leagues that can translate into major league production, right? And the thing is, like, you can complain all you want, but first of all, it's out of your control, because they're not firing Jed yet for reasons that I guess are readily obvious. They're going to keep payroll at a fairly sizable level. It's not going to be, you know, Phillies, Dodgers, New York teams level, but it's going to be a lot. And so with contract coming off the books and Cody Bellinger potentially opting out, you could see a lot of money coming off the books that will allow them to add. The thing is that after a Juan Soto goes off the books, or that he basically is no longer available. So in order for this to work, first of all, that player has to exist. And secondly, he has to become available. So the existing part is easy. We could look at all the rosters. Becoming available gets a little harder, because now you got to figure out how much you're going to trade. But regardless of all of that, I was thinking, like, if you had a chance to completely blow up the Cubs now, you don't have to keep Ian Happ or Nico Horner or Dansby or anybody. You just start over and you get your 26 guys. How would you build it? And the caveat is, like, we're not building an all-time MLB team. What we're trying to do is work within kind of like a Batman Begins universe kind of reality, where you can suspend some disbelief, but everything has to be physically possible. So I was thinking, okay, like, you guys have seen those charts with, like, the $15, and you get, like, $1, $2, $3, $4, $5 levels, and you can spend however you want, but you're limited to those $15, right? So what I was thinking is, you go to the rules, you get a 26-man roster, you get 13 pitchers max, and depending on what they do later on down the line when they set up the next CBA, it might actually shrink, because, you know, MLB has been trying to figure out how to make pitchers pitch longer, and I think we've talked about that. But we're going to stick with 13 for now. You can build the position group however you want, But of course, you have to have someone stand at each of the non-pitcher positions on the field. So that's eight guys. And then the pitching staff can be however you want. You could do all relievers. You could do all longmen. You could do the standard five starters or whatever. And then you assume that you have all kinds of money because Tom Ricketts' heart grew three sizes that day. And the limit is you only get three Hall of Fame level guys. That's like six WAR players. All-star level guys are like 3 to 5 WAR. And then the rest are like 3 WAR and below. So basically you have nine guys who can potentially give you three wins above replacement or better. And then the rest are just like your normal role players. So we don't have to do this episode because of course the World Series still has to happen. We still have to figure out the qualifying offers and who's going to opt out and yada yada, but I thought it was a good place to start because there are going to be guys already on the team. But so it's up to you guys. Like, do we blow up everything completely, or do we consider that some guys are going to stay and then we fill in the blanks? What do you guys want to do?
Are we assuming that we can just grab anyone regardless of availability, or what's the
Yeah, so like if you have a deep farm like the Cubs, you can essentially trade for anyone if you're willing to part with those assets. Yeah.
Okay, so blow like for example, we get to say let's get Shohei Ohtani.
Okay, so there's your one Hall of Fame level guy, right?
Yeah. Can we clone him? Can we get his dog also?
If you stand by the Air Bud rules, there's no rule that says a dog can't play baseball. So sure, let's do that.
Yeah, I would be inclined when we really dive into this to just blow everything up and try that, because I'm sure we'll have more discussions that are more closely tied to reality, but it would be fun to explore what we might do with it if we weren't all that tethered to the things we know are going to happen or that even might happen. It would be an interesting exercise.
Yeah, unfortunately, because of the way roster rules work and money works in MLB, guaranteed contracts and whatnot, money that can't be moved, sunk costs, etc., you can't just get rid of everybody, right? But like in, let's say you're playing, let's say you're playing your favorite video game and you get 26 players, you build your team from the ground up. So, like, I think it's best to think of this conceptually. So I want a team that has some power, but I also want a team that can make contact at the right spots, right? I want a pitching staff that can strike out people, but have enough savvy to get the double play ball if possible. Like people that can generate like 45% ground balls or greater, and try to keep the ball in the park. That's the kind of thing that you're going for anytime you build a team. Humans are imperfect, and not every player is going to have all those attributes. Like, you're not going to get the reason why a Willie Mays was so spectacular is because he's so unique. Like, you're not going to get Willie Mays every generation, right? So we can just kind of assume that whoever is on the team are going to have their weaknesses, and whoever is still an elite level bat is still going to make an out 60% of the time. And even the best pitchers are going to give up runs. So it's kind of like, yes, there's going to be imperfections, but essentially let's build the team that is more likely to score more runs than the other team 90 or more times over the year is what we're trying to do.
Gotcha.
I was saying, I think I'd have to think about the survey to decide on this list for this experiment.
Because in order to do this game the way we want, we got to take like all 700 to 1,000 players that are likely to be on MLB rosters and bin them into these $1 through $5 bins. And that's going to be way more work than any of us want to do. So that's why I was thinking conceptually, like, who are you getting to fill these concepts? Low strikeout guy, high power, good contact, knows how to run bases, can play defense without looking like a statue, those kinds of things. Like, that I think is what Jed Hoyer and Tom Rick or Theo Epstein before him were trying to do, right? It's not always going to work though. Like you saw before that the previous core kind of deteriorated, and that was partially because they kind of carbon copied a lot of the players. Like you can get them out the same way using like a minimal pitchers. It was kind of weird how that worked out, but it was the way it is. And so diversifying the lineup, making sure that even if they can't hit on a given day, they're at least playing good defense, you know, and doing what Adam and Jeff had suggested earlier is getting like a really deep rotation and bullpen that can stand the test of 162 games and last till the postseason so that they can outpitch the opposition who are running out of pitchers because everybody broke, right? So that now that I've said that out loud, it is an incredibly difficult job, and that's, you know, why these presidents owe baseball operations get paid so much money to figure it out.
Well,
Phobos,
and
Phobos.
it's kind of interesting that we've got multiple owners discussing getting rid of their teams. That the Twins, it looks like a foregone conclusion that they're selling, and Reinsdorf is publicly, as he is wont to do from time to time, talk about doing something drastic with the White Sox. But given the pattern of what his tenure as an owner has been like these last several years, it seems likely, you know, that the White Sox could be under new ownership. And that when it's one team, it's like, okay, whatever. But who's the Orioles family?
The Angelos,
The Angelos family, yes. Like
they're
they
about to
did their thing.
swap, right? They
So they
swapped.
sold they sold last year.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
the new folks aren't supposed to take over for a little bit.
Oh,
So
I didn't realize that's the news.
when they do take over, they seem willing to spend more. So I feel like at some point the Orioles are going to take that next step. I think their reputation is they hoard their prospects. And they don't spend the money that they should. But I feel like that's going to change. Ooh, Kodai Senga's in. Okay, sorry.
But we'll see, right? You know, we'll see if that actually becomes the case, because you wonder if, you know, two of the, you know, not really the biggest spending franchises, if they're getting disenfranchised with the future of television rights and that business model, if they're just starting to get cold feet and one out, like who will be the new owners? Like what will that mentality be, and what will the direction be in terms of spending? And you got these super teams who are wanting to just load up the entire roster with your $5 list, and then what is everybody else gonna do? What is, you know, what direction will baseball take if these, you know, little signs turn into bigger trends? I'm actually really curious about that and how it will affect, you know, the overall power balance as far as teams go. Because you know, it just goes back to last year's World Series matchup versus this year's likely World Series matchup. You know, the teams who just kind of want to catch lightning in a bottle seem to have a decent enough chance that the mega giant teams, you know, they'll get their time in the sun, you know, from time to time. But will it turn into the power teams versus the let's gamble with prospect teams / Moneyball lab rats. Just, you know, try and find whatever market inefficiencies there are and see what sticks from the comfort of Sacramento.
I wonder also, because you guys know that in Chicago, the NBC Sports Network or the Comcast Sports Net is no more. And they started like a Chicago Sports Network, but the Chicago Sports Network was having the same problem that LA was when they started their own network, right? So you remember there was like an issue with trying to figure out coverage. And the problem is, these are Chicago teams that are all kind of bad right now in the Blackhawks, the Bulls, and the White Sox. So there's no popularity going on. The demand probably isn't there, and they're having the same kind of problem because Comcast isn't carrying them at the moment. Like, nobody can watch the games, right?
Yeah, so, except they're available, I guess, by
over the air. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you need a high-tech antenna now, because I remember when we were still living in Chicago, they switched from regular, I don't know if you can call it analog.
It's got to be a digital antenna.
That NHG antenna. So those aren't too expensive, but it's like, if I'm already streaming or I'm already on a cable package as the cable, you know, industry slowly dies out, why am I doing that as well, right? So that's like an additional obstacle. And I like the idea.
I'm hardwired not to want to use too many buttons on my remotes to where I actually have to change the mode that I'm working in. You already have to like enter an app to watch half the sporting events you want to watch on, you know, Peacock or Netflix or Paramount or whatever. You know, if you use the MLB app as well. But throwing in old school over the air broadcasts as well, and the hit or miss nature of with digital broadcasting, it's not like analog where you could have your sister hold the antenna and you get a little fuzzy photo and, like, you know, kind of get the gist. You're either getting the picture or you're getting nothing. So
it's like that with me and NFL games too. Like my old place, I got no reception at all because I didn't face the mountain where all the antennas are here.
Yeah,
but here I get like three of the four networks, but to watch ABC, I have to put my antenna like outside on a ladder.
Yeah, like it depends on if you are living in like on top of a mountain where the signals fly free, or you're in a valley like I used to be in California where we got no over the air channels because there were hills in the way, right? So it's, and especially when you're in Chicago, there are lots of buildings in the way. There's, you know, train tracks and freeways and stuff. It's blocking your signal. Like, even if you have a dish, your signal might be blocked. So it's kind of an accessibility thing. So if you want the money, I think at some point, like, the people who are much more smarter than I in terms of like finance and marketing and whatever, they need to figure out what the next system is going to be, because I feel like a lot of people are kind of pissed off these days because all the movies are on like seven different streaming services, and each one is basically, the subscription fees are adding up to what you would pay for a normal cable package anyway. So at some point they need to like figure this out, because I think the best way to make the sport popular is to help people see it affordably, and that's not going to happen going forward, it seems like.
Or even people who want to watch, like, I will pay money to see games. You still can't do it, you know?
Right.
Yeah, it's it is quite the predicament, especially, I have to assume, the White Sox are slated to be on this new Chicago Regional Sports Network.
They are, yeah.
That the Bulls and the Blackhawks are currently on, and it's just, hey, nobody's watching. It is it is bizarre, especially because that was Reinsdorf's thing. I mean, that was really his entry point into buying the Sox, if I can remember correctly, is that, you know, he was the regional sports guy. Like that was his business, the sports channel that started broadcasting White Sox baseball. And that, you know, that was his inroad into owning the team. So, and that, you know, that was kind of at the beginning of regional cable sports networks really having a say in their team's marketing. So it's crazy for it to come full circle to where he's like, screw it. His team doesn't even, you know, have a broadcast rights package with most of the delivery people. It's going to have to be, there are enough teams affected by this predicament that the commissioner of baseball is going to have to figure it out, or his people are, because there's all that uncertainty. It is the safety net for all Major League Baseball owners, is knowing they're getting a ton of regional broadcast money and team, you know, the national broadcast money. And if that is uncertain ground, yeah, the guys who've been, you know, paying for their yachts, you know, with the TV packages, it's not going to keep going like this. And all those you know, restrictions that make it impossible to watch the streaming versions of games if you're living too close to the stadium, you know, if you want to watch your actual local team's games, all those blackout restrictions have been making it next to impossible to make something really work in the cord cutting age. They've got to figure out a way past this that works for everybody. It's just the teams aren't really coordinating their new streaming deals or their new, you know, vanity channel deals in the right way. So all these rights agreements and all these complications are just, you know, they're happening at random times. It has to get coordinated because it's too much of a mess, and it really is undercutting the business side, which is, you know, what makes these games get played. Sorry, I got in the weeds there.
Well, no, it's totally cool. I think the reason why we like the over the air is because we're of the age where we grew up watching WGN on TBS for like the Braves and the Cubs, right? And there was always the game of the week, the Fox, right? And then the local networks were also on your standard cable packages. And then as streaming became popular and they just haven't been able to evolve with the times, and everybody wants their chunk of the pie. So I'm wondering if it makes sense for the original thing that I was thinking of was when the Phoenix Suns owner was like, I don't want my stuff on cable anymore. I just want everybody in Phoenix and in all of Arizona to be able to see my game. So he put it all over the air, and that was successful. Like, that's a way to get awareness of your product and allow everybody to have access to it and become fans organically, because I can't actually see you, you know? That's why so many people in like California and Florida and whatnot became Cubs fans, because not because they lived in Chicago or have any close ties to Chicago, they can actually see the Cubs. And so like when we of the Cola Guard generation have to say, like, back in my day, this is what happened. Like this is really what happened. This is a system that worked to generate so many fans who were then able to generationally help their children and their grandchildren become fans of the Chicago Cubs and other teams similarly, right? So find a way to get back to that. And at some point, like they have to think in terms of the long-term investment of this game, because if they don't, money's going to dry up. Nobody's going to want to do this business anymore. And then the teams, the league, I don't know what's going to happen. I just know that in Star Trek, they say that baseball dies in 2042. We're like 18 years away from that. So you can see like a possible future where baseball no longer exists because people couldn't figure out their system.
I think the smartest thing they could do, honestly, is mimic the example of the Wrigley family, because those were the great innovators who gave away the baseball. I mean, they put baseball on TV. All the owners thought that he was crazy for doing that, because that's your product and you're giving it away. But that's how he worked with every business he ever had. He sold one product and gave another one away with it. And the one he gave away for free always wound up being the thing that people wanted more. And that was the case with WGN Baseball. It just made it free, made it available over the air. And if baseball just scrapped all their sales packages for broadcasting and just made every single game available anywhere you wanted it, make it free, make it available to anyone who could stream, anyone with an antenna that you could get your local games, just make it so that you can, all you need is an ID and a Wi-Fi connection, and you can watch all baseball. And then you start to sell the more analytic loaded stuff, at more extreme packages, or the different broadcasting controls that you have,
Add-ons, yeah.
and just sell advertising rights, like just nationalize that, with like regional packages as they're offered in different places, that your ads go according to where you are, that you get specialized
Mean that
advertising.
MLB TV already does that. Though it's not quite as precise as it could be. They keep getting ads for stuff in Phoenix.
But you got to pay for it. Like you should, like, and if they gave you, like if they were able to use more than just your, zip code, if they were able to use all your cookies, all your that, like you give them access to your data, and they give you all the games, but you also get customized ads, according to who you are and your other search tendencies and all that. They'd get their, it would be worth their while to just make MLB.TV free. Just do it. Screw the subscription fees, get the money from all the data you would get.
If I
You
could,
could make so much more money off of all those customers.
if I could customize my AdSense, though, I would ask them to, like, I will talk to my primary care provider about all this stuff. Please stop talking to me about, like, boner pills or Cologuard or whatever, adult diapers. I don't need that anymore. I get that that's what the demographic is, but that just makes me feel older than I already am. So please, more beer ads, more Doritos. But
I won't need those ads till baseball dies.
it's a very interesting problem to have. I think you made a good point that like I saw MLB trade rumors articles that says the Rockies are cutting payroll, and I'm like, well, sure, good for you. Good
The
for you. But there are other teams, right, that are going to explore sales or look to just kind of stop spending, and those are opportunities. And I feel like we can table this little homework assignment until after the qualifying offers are dealt with. And yeah, that might be a good time to just like talk about the World Series that was and the qualifying offers that were dealt out and most likely declined. So we'll see what's available and then put everybody in bins, because I think That's what basically free agency is, and then there will be a separate trade market. But like once we have the final free agent list after the qualifying offers situation is dealt with, it will be easier to play our little game.
It was more than just a game.
Thanks for you guys for hanging out. I think at this time the Dodgers have three outs left to get. They could be the National League champions. We could also be in a game seven. So I don't know. We'll find out after we stop recording. But thanks again to everybody for listening. You can find us at Worlds. Well, you can't find us there anymore because we shut down the site. But that's why we're at obstructedview.net with the you guys. Our theme song is by Rich Diana, and Final Out Call by Hall of Famer Pat Hughes. And the 2016 World Series was from Randall Sanders. Just enjoy the rest of the games, fellas. New York is at least going to celebrate because the New York Liberty just won the WNBA title, so good for them. That was a pretty tough game. It looks like they just pulled away in overtime, but yeah. Five games, went the distance, pretty good. New York has a lot to be proud of this time around, and maybe one day Chicago will have that same feeling again.
Let's hope.
It was more than just a game.